What's up, literacy advocates? Welcome to another episode of The Literacy Advocate. I'm your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guests today are Brian Kulak. He is the principal of a K-5 school in South Jersey, 22 years in education, 15 as a teacher, mostly teaching high school. He has a master's in school leadership from Rowan, and he's the author of Level Up Leadership, which was published in 2019. It's an extended analogy between the evolution of the gaming industry and educational leadership. My other guest is Jen Floyd. She is a second grade teacher at that same school. She has 10 years of educational experience. She's finishing her master's in educational leadership, and she was the 2018 Teacher of the Year. Welcome to the podcast.
What is up, Tim?
Hi. Hey, I'm so excited to talk to you. I love doing three-person episodes. The thing that we're talking about today is something that both of you were very passionate about. One of the questions I like to ask is, what's a recent epiphany that you've had that you share with a lot of new teachers, or a commonly held belief that you passionately disagree with? And when I asked that question, what came up for you was ideas and thoughts around whether students should or will have the same experiences or the experiences that teachers expect them to have in the classroom when it comes to literacy. Just right off the bat, what are your thoughts on that?
When I was little, thinking about books, I've always had books, you know, with me. My parents were always avid readers, the Babysitter's Club, Goosebumps, right? I remember vivid memories of sitting in bed at night with my sister and my dad reading chapters, and that was my life. And I always, being a teacher and, you know, going through the educational process, I've always envisioned that to be something that I could share with my students. 10 years later, come to know that not all students have the same experiences at home, as we know. Not all students are reading kids. You typically hear, you know, parents and different teachers saying, oh, they're a reading kid or a math kid, you know, which one they feel most comfortable with, their-ness. And it's just some kids don't read the way I do. And mm-hmm. I think my goal in teaching and my goal in life is to really, as much as kids love to read or the kids who do not necessarily like to read, you know, I do believe that some kids just haven't found that book yet. And my goal is to really put books in kids' hands. So yeah. If you don't have a series that you're interested in yet, you know, you just might not have found it yet.
Yeah.
Good. I'm sorry, Tom. Good.
No, I was just going to say something that you said, Jen, there that I really resonated with. Well, it reminded me of this another guest that I had on the show named Glenn Rhodes. He said, we English teachers ought not to be in the business of trying to make more English teachers. Essentially, what he means by that is the things that inspired English teachers to become English teachers, they then try to push that on the kids in their classroom. But the highest and best goal of literacy is not to be an English teacher. That's not to say anything bad about English teachers. They're essential. But it's the highest and best goal of literacy is however best literacy would function in the life of that kid when he becomes an adult, in my opinion.
So I want to log off the call now because I'm a former English teacher and that just hurt my feelings. So I'm saying thanks for having me.
I didn't tell him ahead of time not to say anything about that.
It's funny because it was a perfect segue, Tim, because as you mentioned in the intro, I taught seniors for most of my life. And I distinctly remember the disappointment when they were not responding to what we were reading the way I thought they would or they should. And as a young teacher, I started when I was 22. I took it personally. It must be me, blah, blah, blah. Right. So then you fast forward to now I'm 44. I have two children of my own. To whom I read to all the time and who are avid readers, and I have a newfound approach toward literacy, loving literacy, teaching literacy, and then watching someone like Jen, who's so talented at teaching literacy, has given me yet another lens, you know, to kind of look at it through. So I love what Glenn said, and I'm glad you brought it up here because, you know, in terms of epiphanies, it wasn't until my fourth or fifth year that I started to teach a book called The Perks of Being a Wallflower by Steve Chowski, which blew up in 1999. It really kind of became what people call the catcher in the rye for the next generation, right? And
okay.
I loved it so much, and I wanted the kids to love it so much. And eventually, I think some of the passion I brought to its instruction started to resonate with them. And then you know, seniors were like, you know what, reading is kind of cool. I mean, if I like the book, I'm into it. And, you know, so his point about, you know, wanting to have kids connect with something from literature is far more important than stoking some passion for literature that may never arrive. I'll never have a passion for math or numbers, and that has to be okay. And the same thing goes for kids who will never have a passion for reading. It doesn't mean you can't connect with the literature, yeah, though.
I like the distinction between becoming somebody who has a passion for literature versus becoming someone who is literate, who has found things that they love to read.
Yep, that's a great point.
Yeah. How does this relate to the idea of control in the classroom? Because that's another thing that you each are very passionate about.
Yeah, I'll start with just in general. Like for me, it was stopping at a passage and having that sort of pregnant pause over the class and wait for a reaction that never came. And so for me, it was like, how could you not see how beautifully this is written? How do you not understand how powerful this poem is, right? And so over time, and again, don't forget, you know, I learned a lot. I didn't know anything when I was 22. It took me a long time to even get my sea legs. And part of that was understanding that I had to give up control. And it's really hard for teachers at any level. Now, as a principal of an elementary school and of a staff who is incredibly talented and hardworking, I know how badly they want everything to go well all the time. It's not going to be that way. So I just try to, you know, remind them of my own struggles as a teacher and accepting that sometimes you have to let the kids kind of lead you to the water that you want them to drink. So if, you know, if Jen's teaching a lesson, you know, in the Elephant and Piggy series, which is, you know, minimalistic, but there's so much you can get out of it and the kids aren't getting out what they want, but then one kid raises what she wants, excuse me, and one kid raises his hand about this, then that's her lesson. And the design of her lesson is gone. And it should be, because that kid said that, now we go this way. That's how I think we need to let go of control and let the kids start to take over a little bit more of that. What do you think, Jen?
No, absolutely. I completely agree. I think that when you are, you know, you have your lesson plans, if you're a teacher, you have some sort of OCD on, you know, making sure you're checking boxes, going through your to-do list. Of course, you have to address standards and different concepts. But, you know, every group of kids are different. And I think one lesson that would work with one group, you know, it could be my favorite lesson ever. I do the same thing. I read the same read alouds year after year because they are near and dear to my heart. You start reading a book and the kids aren't getting it. They're not engaged in it. They're not seeing it the same way you see it. And you're not, you know, the lessons aren't going well because of it. I think it's totally okay to, you know, switch course and really either, like Brian said, if a kid pulls something else out of the book, you know, stop what you're doing, have that aha moment for that kid, empower the child, give them the voice. You know, it's a great role model for the rest of the class to have that voice and to share what they're seeing, even if it's not something that you're seeing. And then on the other hand, you know, if a book just isn't working for a class, then, you know, it's something the teacher needs to really look at and say, like, okay, what else can, you know, interest these kids more, engage the kids more, so they are getting something out of the book. I'm not just reading to kids who are just, you know, rolling their eyes at me because they're not enjoying it, because reading is enjoying as well. You're not going to get anything out of the books you read or the pieces that you're writing if you don't have some kind of enjoyment as well.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, so there's a debate that goes on, and I've talked to different people that are on both sides of that debate on this podcast about teaching reading and writing with the focus on just like, I need to get them competent versus I need to inspire them to love reading. And when I first started the podcast, my heart was very much in, we need to inspire them to love reading because everything follows from that. But I have shifted over time to a much stronger appreciation for the idea of they need to be competent. That's the non-negotiable. Like, we want them to love reading, but the non-negotiable is that they need to be competent. How do you guys feel about that?
I say, Brian, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I mean, I struggle, Tim, to be honest with you. I mean, again, as an English teacher and somebody who refused to let the standards guide everything I did, I thought that was a sanitized way to go about teaching literacy. But I think you're right, because again, as a father of two small children, they need to be able to be competent in reading regardless of what they're reading for or about. So I have one child who's incredibly passionate about reading. and who reads ravenously, and then I have another kid who loves math, engineering, and puzzle piecing things together. But for the younger one, I'm like, bud, you have to be able to read the instructions if you want to put this thing together, right? And so you have to learn how sentence structure goes, when to pause, when another step is being presented to you, you know, that kind of thing. Whereas my older one, she wants to dig into metaphor and what do I think the author's talking about and author craft. And actually, Jen has been really instrumental in both their lives, but mostly with my daughter, because she's the older one, in terms of literacy. And so it's a really fine line. And one of the things I say to the staff a lot, Tim, actually just to myself, is that two things can be true. And I'm going to kind of punt that answer and say that I think both of those can be true. I don't know if it's chicken or the egg, but both of those can be true.
Yes.
I agree. I think at the younger level, it's so important for them to learn the basics and learn the foundation so they can grow a love of literacy. Because if they can't, and even like growing like an understanding of reading. So even if you're not, you know, your joy or what you're doing in your spare time is more building the puzzles or, you know, reading manuals so you can figure something out. You know, you need the foundation to do that. And it could be the same as far as, okay, now I understand, you know, everything about reading, everything about, you know, the written word, let me find books that I like. And something similar that I do, and it counts because it's literacy, is I run a NaNoWriMo club every year.
Oh, nice. I love that.
Second to fifth grade. So NaNoWriMo stands for National Novel Writing Month. It's in November every month. I always tell the grownups it's a real thing. It's a real nonprofit program. And 1 year, I'm also a writer. I love to write. I'm a, you know, creative writer. And 1 year, I felt like this program was something that would be a fun, you know, in addition to our writing pieces, right? The writing pieces where the kids are learning the structure and addressing the standards. Let's have this class like creatively write. So they started writing in my class. It became a big party at the end of the month. Of course, everything's a party in my room. And those students, there was a good number of those students who really enjoyed it. The parents gave me really great feedback and they wanted to do it in third grade. Obviously it's not curriculum. I can't tell the third grade teachers, like, yes, you have to run this little club in addition to everything else on your plate. So I started for third and it ended up third through fifth grade. They can, come in at recess, a few days a week during November, and they can still participate in this creative writing experience. So I do think there's a time and place, like Brian said, and you agree, for the basics, you know, to address what will help the kids in life, in their grown-up life, and then a time for them to be creative and just find what they're passionate for, you know, passionate about, regardless of what it is.
Yeah. I just want to say, Jen, I am a kids book author. And
awesome.
I run a kids book production company where I turn other people into authors just for fun. If anyone in this program wants to actually get their book like professionally illustrated and published and live on Amazon, this is just an open invitation.
Oh, we would love that. Do please it. Don't do tell it. Me that. Don't
yeah.
tell
no,
me
do
that.
It. Yeah. That's yeah. awesome.
Oh my goodness. We ran it virtually this year. This was our virtual year. It's my seventh year doing it. And it's near and dear to my heart. And some of my kids, we had some kids who have moved on to the middle school, they have come back, you know, sent some videos for the kids this year. So they are still very much part of the program. These kids would love hearing that.
Yeah, Jen, you gotta take them up on that. That's awesome. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've offered this to a few teachers and no one has taken me up on it yet.
Well, but that's about to change, my friend.
I was gonna say, please. You don't know what you're saying right now.
Yeah, you're talking to the right people, Tim.
Oh, I love it. I had a question in there, but I forgot what it was. Brian, do you have any closing thoughts that you want to share to close out this episode?
No, I think, first of all, kudos to you for everything that you're doing for literacy and literacy teachers. You know, Jen and I were so excited to hop on the podcast. Obviously, I was just in a room before the show, just talking about reading and talking about teaching and learning and how connected it all is. And so, you know, we're going to extend the invitation back your way. If there's anything you need from us, you know, in the future for your podcast, your company, doing a guest spot, you know, with the kids here.
I already have something, and it is I am always looking for classrooms to test out the books that I'm currently working on.
Oh, we would love that.
You're in.
All I want is just to be able to come to your classrooms on Zoom and test out my ideas.
You're done. That's that. It. We'll book it as soon as we can. For, I mean, seriously, we have authors in all the time, K to five. So you can do it on multiple grades or whatever you want. But we, you know, we just wanted to kind of pay you back for having us on the show.
That's awesome. Oh, I can't wait. Awesome. Great. It was so good to meet both of you. I'm so excited to come to your school virtually. And I would love to see some of your kids' books actually like be on Amazon.
That'd be so cool.
Oh, that's Let's wonderful. They'd love
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
How should listeners connect with you?
So I am at bkulak11 on Twitter. And then email is levelupplead @gmail.com.
And I am at Floyd4EDU on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on the podcast.
Thanks,
Tim. Thank you so much.